Good morning. You are dialed into Citizens Audit Committee meeting scheduled to convene momentarily with roll call. Thank you. Our Audit Committee meeting is publicly noticed in the Florida Administrative Register to convene at 8:30 and will be recorded with transcribed minutes available on our website. Ray, please broadcast the meeting. For those attending today's meeting through the public link, you're automatically in listen-only mode with presentations appearing in the webinar. Panelists, thank you for identifying yourself prior to addressing the committee. Chair Shelton, we have no requests to speak at today's meeting. May I proceed with roll call?
Yes.
Chair Shelton?
Present.
Governor Spotswood? Board Chair Baruff?
Here.
Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Barbara. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. We'll kick off the morning with the Audit Committee. First order of business is approval of the minutes from the December 10 Audit Committee member. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
There a second?
Second.
Minutes are approved. We'll move right into Mr. Joe Martins from the Office of Internal Audit. Joe, you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and governors. Today, we'll walk you through a few items, which include the internal audit progress, performance metrics for the quarter, key audit observations and what they mean, and updates to the enterprise risk and internal control programs. Slide two, please. For the 12-month period from quarter four 2025 through Q3 2026, we have completed 12 of the 26 engagements on the plan, with seven engagements currently in progress and seven are scheduled to commence soon. Completed this quarter were the Artificial Intelligence Governance Advisory Engagement, CBIT Segregation of Duties Audit, Claims Check Processing, the Commission's Audit, Employee Expense Review, and the Office of Internal Audit Quality Assurance Program Review. For artificial intelligence, we focused on how we define, govern, and measure artificial intelligence use in decision-making and support throughout the organization. We provided advisory guidance and governance workflow design and model oversight practices to support responsible use. The CBIS segregation duties audit, we reviewed access and monitoring controls in the Guidewire cloud environment. We noted continued improvement following the SaaS transition and the adoption of My Identity, and identified additional opportunities to strengthen least privilege and segregation of duty governance. With the claims check processing audit, we found the process operating as intended with no exceptions noted. The Commission's audit found controls generally effective and management has begun actions to further strengthen security and access over Commission payment files. The employee expense review found the process effective but resource intensive for low types of expenses. We identified efficiency opportunities through thresholds, system-based controls, and stronger management accountability. The Quality Assurance Improvement Program, we noted that the internal audit function is following the internal audit standards, and we are in conformance with what their requirements are. In progress this quarter, our work includes CAT readiness, ethics, IT general controls, premium invoicing, refunds and suspense accounts, secondary employment, underwriting analysis in our 2026 data analytics program, which we continuously improve and try to build continuous reviews as we go on. Looking ahead, scheduled engagement include automated underwriting, claims vendor management, an e-payments platform review, an easy links review, that's the clearinghouse, patching and vulnerability management, predictive model governance, and technology governance remediation follow-up. Next slide, please. On performance, we continue to track a small set of clear measures. Our audit plan completion was 100% for the quarter. Issued closure is at 89% with agreed timelines. Remaining items are expected to close within the agreed time frames. One open item, the agency compliance IT-related findings, was overdue as of December 31 and remains under active follow-up. The auditor productivity remains at 80% and aligned with our annual target with IAA recognized targets as well. Average engagement cycle time for quarter one deliverables was approximately 110 days or 14 weeks, and that includes some non-working hours and time during that period also. Overall delivery is on track, and we are managing capacity well, and we are staying focused on areas of the highest risk and value within the organization. Next slide, please. During the reporting period, we identified two high-impact observations. The first one relates to access to confidential payment files was not sufficiently restricted during the review. This is a security and fraud prevention concern, and management has initiated measures to strengthen access controls. Second, in the CBER segregation of duties, segregation of duties is yet holistically embedded within the cloud, is not yet holistically embedded within the cloud environment. Management has agreed to evaluate the items and define remediation action and risk acceptance decisions as appropriate. And all observations are actively monitored, and we will continue to provide visibility into the status of the closure of these observations. Next slide, please. For enterprise risk, we continue to partner with management to identify, assess, and manage risks that may affect strategic and operational objectives. In quarter four, the 2025 risk assessment plan was completed, totaling 78 risk assessments across strategic, operational, and project risks. The results indicate exposure remains well managed, with residual risks rated low and 89% operating within tolerance. As of December, 24% of the residual risks were rated medium or high. One high-rated residual risk remains within the ELMS implementation program, with mitigation in progress. Current monitoring indicates no material concerns. For Q1, enterprise risk plans to complete 20 operational risk assessments, implement self-service capabilities to improve effectiveness and efficiency, and partner with the business areas to integrate risk appetite and establish key risk indicators that provide measurable insights into changes and exposure. On internal control, the 2025 management control self-assessments were completed with a strong overall control environment, and no material concerns were identified. 87% of primary controls operate effectively, and 8% are identified for minor process improvements, and 5% require redesign to keep pace with process changes. Internal control and compliance also strengthen compliance assurance through joint integrated reviews and higher risk laws, rules, and regulations with the compliance function. For Q1, internal control will expand integrity reviews and control self-assessment coverage across higher rated requirements, and partner with the Office of Internal Audit Data Analytics team to implement a continuous monitoring program that improves coverage, efficiency, and risk identification. We'll be focusing on the KPIs and key risk indicators when we do that. That concludes my presentation, sir, if there are no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martins. A couple things that I just want to put on the record. And when you look at the page 4 in the report, which shows the high risk as it relates to the commissions and the segregation of duties, those are critical controls, and Joe and his team have been working through that. But it's important to point out that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, there was no data compromised or any type of information that was not inappropriately reached into or was hacked is the better word. So working with management, Joe and his team are addressing those things. And then second, question that Joe and I always talk about when we meet, their management has been very forthcoming and working with, and there's no issues between management and the Office of Internal Audit. So good report, Joe. I have nothing else to add, but are there any questions from Governor Spotswood? Chair Baruff?
No comment.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much, sir.
Next, Ms. Montero, our Chief Financial Officer. You're recognized to present your report. Jennifer?
Good morning. Behind tab 3, you'll find the materials I'm going to be discussing, the 2025 results of operations and financial position, which provides an overview of Citizens' unaudited financial position, including cash flows, invested assets, and surplus, as well as operational results for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2025. And the document that follows provides commentary, discussion, and analysis of those operating results in the financial position. I'll be providing a summary of the information provided within the commentary document. So at December 31st, 2025, cash and invested assets totaled $8.98 billion, which is approximately $1.07 billion less than at December 31st, 2024, as a result of net cash flows used in operations of approximately the same amount. Surplus at December 31st was $5.16 billion, reflecting an increase of approximately $976 million in comparison to December 31st, 2024. The increase in surplus was driven by net income of approximately the same amount. Direct premiums written in 2025 was $2.6 billion, or approximately $2 billion less premium than was written in 2024. The number of new policies written has decreased to 177,000 in comparison to the 367,000 new policies written a year prior. In addition, the renewal rate of 82% reflects a decrease of 1% compared to the renewal rate during the same period, 2024. Premiums ceded through depopulation in 2025 were $1.21 billion, which is $189.7 million more than premiums ceded in 2024 through depopulation. Premiums ceded for private reinsurance and through coverage through the CAP fund for the 2025 risk transfer program totaled $741.8 million, which is $118.5 million less than premiums ceded for the 2024 risk transfer program. A decrease in the reinsured exposures through the CAP fund was partially offset by an increase in reinsured exposure through private reinsurance, driving the year-over-year reduction in premiums ceded. At December 31st, there were 8 named storms that had significant loss in LAE reserving, reserves outstanding. From the prior accident year, they remain outstanding liabilities for Hurricane Irma from 2017, Tropical Storm Ada for 2020, Hurricanes Ian and Nicole for 2022, Hurricane Adelia in 2023, and Hurricanes Debbie, Helene, and Milton in 2024. I'm going to hit on 2 of the larger, more recent storms, Milton and Ian. Hurricane Milton, which made landfall October 10th, 2024, has projected ultimate direct losses in LAE of $2.052 billion at December 31st, 2025. This is a reduction of $21.5 billion from December 31st, 2024. No reinsurance recoveries have been recorded due to the levels not meeting the retention of Citizens reinsurance contracts. Hurricane Ian, which made landfall on September 28, 2022, had projected ultimate direct losses in LAE of $3.35 billion at December 31, 2025. This is a reduction of $73.7 million from the projected, $73.7 million from the projected ultimate of $3.42 billion as of December 31, 2024. Of the $3.35 billion of direct losses in LAE, $850.8 million is recoverable under Citizens reinsurance contracts, resulting in net losses in LAE of only $2.5 billion. The year in underlying non-CAT loss and loss in LAE ratio for calendar year 2025 has improved by 4.8 percentage points as compared to calendar year 2024. This improvement is driven by both a reduction in overall frequency coupled with a reduction in litigation. Administration expenses incurred for the year ending 2025 of $175.5 million were $900,000 less than administrative expenses incurred during the same period for 2024 and $26.8 million less than budget. Citizens 2025 year-end expense ratio is 17.1%, reflecting a 2.6% increase from the same period a year prior and a 0.5% increase compared to budget. For 2025, total investment income was $335.9 million, or $227.9 million less than the same period in 2024, while the average invested assets decreased $825.5 million. Included in the 2025 investment income is $10.1 million related to the defeasance of the 2015 Series A1 bonds payable that was recorded as investment income in 2025. Excluding the impact on this transaction, net investment income decreased to $38 million in 2025 compared to the same period in 2024. This decrease is largely the result of a reduction in investment assets alongside with the reduction of market rates in money market funds and other short-term securities. And that completes my report, so I'll pause for any questions.
Thank you. I didn't want to interrupt. I have three questions. There's an easy one first. The number of policies in force at 395,337, is that the lowest Citizens in the history of Citizens?
It is
the lowest in the history.
By far.
That's very important.
Before that, it was in 2018, we had 427,000.
Thank you. That's great. Number two, and I read this on the legal expenses for the year, kind of twice what they were last year. And your explanation, and I read that, you know, $2.2 million, and it's due to expenditures related to DOA as well as training expenses. When we were going to DOA, our understanding was that, you know, we would see that would be far less than, you know, what we're doing the old way before that. Are the costs from the old litigation that we were paying out, is it somewhere else?
So the costs with DOA are the fees that we have to pay up front.
Okay.
To fund that. So at the time that we were paying that, we weren't quite using DOA yet. We were doing that so they could go hire attorneys. We were still using it the old way, so we were paying those fees that way, and we hadn't moved to DOA yet to find those savings because we had to front. The way that DOA works, and Tim knows better than I do, but you have to pay the portion of which you use. And DOA did not have judges, administrative judges, for insurance. So we had to fund that. They had to go through a process of hiring them. And so while that process was happening, we kind of had double expense. We had our old way of paying, which is what we were using at the time, plus we were having to fund DOA.
So it's a time, I get it. So timing. With the old way going away, that's going to go down in the DOA thing. We should see that number come down next year.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Cirio?
If I may, Chairman, I just want to clarify something. I think what Jennifer said is correct, but there's been a little bit of misinformation out there. You know, governmental entities that utilize DOA pay for DOA services. They pay the division of administrative hearings. They do not pay the judges. There's been a narrative out there that, oh, Citizens pays. That's not how it works. Whether it's a city government, an entity of state government, when you utilize the services of DOA, you pay the division, and the judges themselves have. They have employment protection, so they can't be, you know, there's no pressure on them to rule one way or another. They have civil service type protection. So I just want to make that clear.
That's a very good point. Those are my two questions. I thought I had three, I only have two. Governor Spotswood, Chair Baruff, any questions?
When do you see the savings materialize in our change of how we're processing litigation?
Tim, do you hear that?
Good morning. My name is Jay Adams, the Chief Insurance Officer for the record. So to answer kind of both these questions, we reported at the Claims Committee. Can you not hear me? We reported at the Claims Committee that we are starting to see a pretty significant decrease in our legal expenses. Give me one second here. And we've been reporting to the board through our legal billing that when we have to come back and ask for that $50 million tranche a couple times a year, since August of last year, we had been averaging about $12 million a month in our defense fees. And keep in mind, most of what's still pending on the defense side is older claims, and they're older catastrophe claims, and they represent in excess of 50% of what's sitting in litigation. But beginning in August, we went from $12 million down to $11 million. In September, it dropped to 10. In October, it dropped to 8 million. And we're continuing to see those reductions. And we believe that we will still be able to bring in the legal defense cost under what this board has already approved through the remainder of the contract. We are starting to see a pretty significant increase of activity going through the DOA program. And the things that do go through that program are significantly less cost from a defense piece because they don't pin for 2, 3, 4 years. And that's where we're getting that significant savings.
So we should see the results when? At the end of this year, we should be able to say we're finally below the total because of the timing issue we have with the previous way of doing things as opposed to our new way?
Yeah, I believe absolutely we'll see that by the end of the year, because we started seeing it in August of last year, and they just really haven't caught up to the results yet.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're good.
Thank you, Ms. Montero. And thank you, Jay. Next, we have our representatives from Forbes Mazur here to give us a very brief update on the status of the audit that will be forthcoming. Gentlemen, welcome. You're recognized.
Smith served in this role for the previous 5 years. The previous 5 years to that, I was the engagement partner, so rotating back on after a five-year pulling off period, which is one of the,
Can you hear me? Is that better? Apologies. But rotating back on after a five-year cooling off period. Sam is with us. Sam has been on this engagement pretty much for the duration of his career with us. He's going to walk us through our audit plan and sort of just a quick status update.
Good morning, Governors. Sam Wishard, Senior Manager with Forbes Mazars. I'm going to cover a few deliverables first to start. We have three reports that we'll be issuing this year. We have Citizens Stat Report, Citizens GASB Report, and the FMAP Gap Report. In terms of communications with you, I will communicate our audit plan today, and then we'll also communicate the results of the audit at the completion. Other letters that we'll be providing an internal control letter, acknowledgement letter, qualification letter, and any reporting that's requested by you. For timing this year, we've wrapped up our interim field work. It's through review right now. We are communicating our planning with you today. Our final field work will begin mid-April, and then we anticipate audit report issuance on May 15th. Quickly cover our audit strategy. We have a risk-based approach that we focus on the highest risk of material misstatement. We will perform walkthroughs of internal controls. We'll also focus on significant non-recurring transactions. We'll also communicate with you frequently and timely as needed. Significant risk areas this year. The first three I'm going to go through are significant risk areas and estimates. First one is IBNR reserves. We'll perform valuation with our external actuary. Second will be the risk of premium recognition. We'll do that through substantive tests of policy cancellations and the cutoff of those cancellations. Final significant risk we'll cover is management override of controls to perform journal entry testing. The last two here, just estimates we want to cover in the financial statements. We have the investment impairment, which will utilize our business valuation group internally. And then we also have any adjustments and modifications to reinsurance contracts and risk transfer, the reinsurance related items. In terms of our subject matter professionals we'll utilize this year, for IT, we'll use Matthew Smith. He's a partner with Forbes Mazars. For valuation, we'll use the business valuation group internally. And then for our external actuary, we'll use Tom Bassey with Davies. And then the team here, as Matt mentioned, Matt Church is going to be the partner this year. Matthew Smith will be the IT partner with us, and then I'll be the audit senior manager.
Thank you. Any questions for our external auditors from the committee? You know, I still like to make my annual objection to the need for two reports on the same entity, but I think that's falling on fruitless grounds, but I know you have to do the both. But thank you. We'll be in touch, I'm sure, and coordinating with Joe, and we appreciate your work here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, the Office of the Inspector General report has been provided for information only. It's in your board packets and the audit committee packets, and if there's no questions on that, we've had no discussions prior. I have no new business to bring before the committee. Is there anything the committee members would like to bring forward? Hearing none, then we are adjourned, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.